You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight. It is our weekly podcast where we give you a roundup of the week's top business news. But for today, we're doing something, you know, just a bit different because we are talking about a story, a book, a written work. And we are with Theto Nyati, who is currently the CEO of Altron. And he recently published a book called Betting on a Darkie, where he details a story all the way from growing up in Tabase, all the way to his journey through Microsoft, IBM, Lampac, and then to MTN and now to Altron, and some of his thoughts just around leadership in the country, his influences, family, and some of his thoughts around the politics of what's going on today. So that's the discussion we're going to be having, and make sure that, you know, just let us know on social media, you know, what do you think of this particular discussion, and, you know, go out, read the book. I've actually gone through the book and it's quite an interesting read. Theto, how are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to hear that you have read the book. I've had instances where I'm being interviewed by someone who has clearly not read the book. So, yeah, it's very good to hear that.
Actually, starting on the book, why did you decide to write the book? And is it and would you say it's an autobiography?
So why did I decide? There are many reasons why I decided to write. I'll just focus maybe on two.
Yeah.
Two reasons why. I am someone who connects with a lot of people, young and old, who people are seeking guidance with regards to mentorship and coaching, and this number of people that I've been working with over the years, it continues to grow beyond my capacity to handle them. And I just felt that, you know, there are so many people that can learn from, because the kind of guidance that I give these people is largely linked to my own experiences.
Yeah.
So I felt writing a book would be a way of helping myself to scale beyond my capacity, you know, physical capacity. And it will be able to, wherever you are sitting, if you are interested in learning and also avoiding some of the mistakes that people like myself have made over the past, it's a good resource to use.
Yeah.
It also helps you to be able to make the kind of choices that can lead you to, I guess, good results.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it also touches on some key values that can also lead one to make an important impact in terms of society. So that's the first reason why I wrote this. But the other reason is really we as Black people,
yeah,
in general, we do not write our stories. If our stories are being written, it's not us writing those stories.
Yeah.
So I felt that I needed my own voice, my own contribution. I may not be at the end of my career, but who said I should not be writing at this stage of my life? You know, who has come with any rule like that? So I don't necessarily, just follow any rules. I just felt internally that it's the right time for me to write something like this. It's a contribution that I'm making, and I feel that it's appropriate to be doing it at this time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with those two things in mind, especially the first part where you said there's certain lessons along the way you'd like to impart, did you have a reader in mind when you wrote the book? Or is it sort of cross-sectional that, you know, different people would take from it what they will?
You know, I had a reader who was actually everybody. In the sense that here you have a Black man going through life. In this life, this person is interacting with different types of people.
Yeah.
And it would be white, Indian, Black. It could be people locally. It could be people that are, you know, in other countries abroad. You going through all of these experiences, whether you are that person, you want to understand what is the impact of this, the rest of the world to that person, or you are one of the people who are interacting with this particular individual and you want to understand the impact that you have to people like myself, this book is relevant. You know, it's relevant whether you are a white manager trying to understand how you can positively impact or how you negatively impact your employees. Mm. It makes a lot of sense to you. Also, if you are a black employee going through life, how do you go about making decisions in such a way that as tough as that environment can be, you can achieve your objectives? Mm. So it applies really to a number of people. So the reader was a number of people, not just one group of people. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, actually getting into the content of the book, I just want to start off, you know, I'm going to call it sort of in the middle, somewhere in the middle of the book. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting passage, and I'm very interested to know what the thinking must have been like around that time, because I was like, this sounded like it must have been you're living your best life. But at the same time, I think it must have taken a strain, because you said it must have been when you were still at IBM. Mm-hmm. And you recount that you got a certain role at the HQ in Paris.
Yes.
And I found it interesting. You were flying. You were commuting between Joburg and Paris.
Yes.
Every week.
Every week, yes.
For like 2 months.
It was 2 to 3 months. Yeah.
What was that part of your life like?
you know, from far, it may look like that's fun. Mm. After a couple of flying up and down, you just feel that flying is actually not fun. And not to be with your family is not fun. Mm. So leaving your family here on a Sunday, going to Europe in Paris, staying there in a hotel, and then coming back, you know, it's just you are not in one place. Mm. And that's not fun. But at the same time, it's something that needed to be done. You know, there is no way that you could have handled it any differently. I had already signed up for the job there, so I needed to do my job there. But I could not bring my family with me because we had to get all of the necessary work permits. Mm. So that period is just a period that was necessary to handle it like that. Mm. So it was really, really tough. But for people that you know, have not really traveled that much, have not flown, it sounds like it's a great thing, but it was not. Mm. Yeah.
And actually, on that point, I thought it might be a good way to sort of get into one of the biggest themes that runs through your book, and that's the importance of family.
Yes.
And I want to hear your thoughts on two fronts.
Yeah.
One, you know, the family that you grew up with.
Yes.
And then two, the family that you then, you know, created with your wife.
Yeah.
What type of, because in telling your story, you're also telling their story.
Yes.
So what type of permissions did you have to get? Because you're quite candid, you know, in the book, just around the nature of the relationships, strengths, weaknesses. What type of permissions or discussions did you have before writing the book and actually, you know, being open about those particular aspects?
So my starting point was I needed to write a book, and in this book I have to be as open and as honest as possible, and in being candid, I may actually make other people to be pissed off with me, and that was okay, and I told myself that I would live with that, but as long as whatever I'm saying is truthful, is a fact, that's what I'm going to be saying. So starting from that position, I did not really go out to seek permissions from people. Yeah. I was prepared to live with the consequences of my actions, because the driver here, for me, the driver was the truth, and to tell a story that was authentic.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, With that in mind, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the family that you grew up with? You reference them all along the book.
Yeah.
The sisters in the UK.
Yeah.
The brother that you used to do the morning, you know, runs with. What are your relationships now? Yeah. Have they read the book?
Yes.
And what are their thoughts?
So my I've got a large family.
Yeah.
We've got a large family of 10. And in that family of 10, my dad already, when my mother married my dad, he already had 6 children who are my step brothers and sisters. And he married my mom, and I'm the firstborn, and the 4 of us. So we're a family of 10. And in that family of 10, we all actually lived under one roof, and a lot of dynamics when you've got so many people. You get along with others, some others, and sometimes you don't get along. There's also a divide linked to who the mothers. So there's that. So the parent played a significant role in trying to bring all of us together. And I would say that my mother was probably at the center of trying to drive that that unity within that family. And we have very good relationships with each other, and more so now that we're much older than before. What has happened though is that if you look at the role that my mother played, she lifted the family from, I would say, lower middle class to middle class. And because of that, you find that from me to my brothers, how we ended up living and the kind of opportunities that we got were maybe different from the opportunities that were there for the earlier children. So if you, depending on how you look at that, you may thought that there was an unfairness, but I think it's largely it was driven by the fact that our social position had changed as a family. When you look at that now as adults, all of us look at it, there's people understand it, but at that time, I think there were some challenges. So we've got very good relationship with my brother. Actually, my brother is late. He was actually a teacher. He ended up doing some tutoring in the math and science up here in Johannesburg. It's an area that has huge demand for his services. He's late. My other brother, who's a lawyer, he's also up here in Johannesburg. And we do not really have a relationship with him. But with my sisters and everybody else who have. And he actually surprised me, my brother. He was at the book launch.
Okay.
And he was there. They've read the book. They've bought some copies. You know, so everybody has read the book.
Okay. I actually want, you know, just now you spoke about how your mother was able to lift your family sort of, you know, you said lower middle into that middle class. And perhaps get your thoughts on how that has informed the rest of your business career and outlook, especially because when you're talking, when you hear the stories of black leaders, you know, particularly those who grew up in apartheid times, it's usually from a position of poverty, right? But you were, you know, the sort of, can we call it a privileged sort of position in some measure?
I don't know, but things are relative, right?
Yeah, of course.
I come from an environment where both of my parents were teachers. I think that's a plus. And my dad, my mother decided to stop teaching, and she started a business, which was a trading store which supported the entire village, and that is thing that actually shaped my approach to business, because I grew up in that store. We were supplying the goods for that store. We had to go fetch the goods, the waking up in the morning, 4:30 in the morning, that came from that time, the hard work, serving customers, coming back from school, go behind the counter, you have to serve customers.
how you relate and how my mother related to the people that she employed. That shaped how I look at the people that work for me, you know, the respect that she gave them, how she involved them in decision making around this particular shop, and how she related to, in general, to the customers. And that to me, if you were to see what is the common thing in terms of my leadership style, is putting people first. Those people being our own employees and customers.
You
know?
Yeah.
That's the one thing that's common right through, you know, all of the way, of the jobs that I've taken, and that's informed by her largely. Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you start your own business? Simply because of, you know, that particular background, because you know you've done very well in the corporate sector,
yeah.
But why didn't you start your own business?
That's a good question. A number of people ask that. In fact, there are two questions that people ask. Why don't you start your own business? We seem to be doing so well in private sector. Why don't you go to government? You know. So those are really the two questions that people ask. My answer to that is that you all of us need to be self-aware. You need to know yourself.
Yeah.
What are the things that you are good at and that what are the things that you are not good at? I know myself that I am not an entrepreneur. You know, my brother, who is a doctor, is an entrepreneur. He's doing a great job there. I cannot do what he does.
Okay.
What I do is to take businesses that are already there and help those businesses to grow. That is my strength. That is my strength. So that's why I'm not going to be starting any business soon. I can advise people that are already in business.
Yeah.
I sit there and guide them and advise them.
Okay. Mm. Before we go for a break, on that issue of whether to start your own business or not, for your own kids, do you have a vision of them being business people or, you know, just excelling in the field?
there's one thing that my mother said to me often, not just to me, to all of us, is that you must do whatever you like, you know, follow your heart. And that's what I'm practicing largely with my children. I like business, but they may not, you know. I remember my daughter, she was shadowing me when I was at Microsoft for 2 days. She shadowed me, you know, exciting, go to work together, she's watching everything. So now I was driving, at the end of those 2 days, driving home, said, I'm asking her, so what do you think? she said, she's very clear that, at least she's clear that she's not going to do the kind of job that I'm doing for her. I mean, it's not the kind of news that you want to hear, you know, you are so excited about your own work, you think that is the best thing, and your daughter is saying no, and I was comfortable with that.
Okay.
You know, she must follow her heart.
Okay. We're just gonna take a quick break. We'll be back after this.
The cryptocurrency revolution is a rabbit hole that goes deeper than just Bitcoin and blockchain. South Africa's revolutionary cryptocurrency investment platform, Revix, presents Beyond Bitcoin, your guide to the crypto future. Unpack the news, trends, and terminology live every Monday on The Gareth Cliff Show on cliffcentral.com. You can also download every episode on the Cliff Central app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is the Business Day Spotlight. We are here with Mteto Nyati. He is the author of Betting on a Darkie. He's telling us the story. And just before the break, he was just telling us about some of his thoughts around family and his own kids. And, you know, unfortunately, his daughter said that she would not want to do what he particularly does. Actually, as we move forward, I want to get into, you know, I guess the corporate part of life, because that seems to have been, you know, that's a big chunk of it.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you took the decision to sort of move away from engineering. I think by now, engineering has been the minority of your career.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yet you've been in technology companies, you know, ever since. Is there one company of, I guess, between IBM, Microsoft, MTN, Altron, that has made the most impact on you, or has it sort of just been a culmination over the years?
Yeah, so you, when you look at it, you may look at it and say, yes, it appears as if he has moved away from engineering.
Yeah.
And when in reality, what is it that I took from engineering that is still relevant to me across? It's really that ability to understand your environment, to analyze problems and come up with solutions to the problems. And that is a skill that not everybody has that, you know. I've sat with a few people. I remember that we had an invite coming from, we're invited as few CEOs by the Department of Education. And they came to us saying that, you know, they were presenting to us some of the challenges that are facing education. What surprised me is that they listed over 50 things that they say are the problems in our education system. Clearly for me, and there's no such a thing that 50 plus things, you know, you need to analyze that and come to what are the two or three things that are the drivers of the problem of education in your country. Other things are just symptoms. You know, if you are operating at a level you are mixing symptoms and problems, you know, you have a problem. So the ability to quickly get to what are the things that are driving, what are the problems here, that skill comes from engineering. Okay. And it's a skill that you can take across, you know. You can just be sitting with a person, having a discussion, human-to-human discussion. That skill still work in a family environment, you know. So what you were asking, which company has had the most impact here? I would say it's IBM.
Okay.
I would say it's IBM. IBM shaped me in a number of ways. Maybe IBM in terms of technology, right? I spent 12 years at IBM. It shaped me a lot. The experience, the global experience within IBM, ended up having maybe four or five different roles within IBM. So when I get to a CEO role, when you have had so much experience in different type of things, I can sit with the CFO, you know, discussing his thing. I know when that CFO is not really, you know, you're not telling me the truth, or I quickly pick up that thing. Yeah. Or I'm sitting with somebody who's doing distribution or that. Why is it that? It's the experience, the time that I took in each and every one of the roles that I played. And those roles, you know, sometimes the young people of today, they want to be in a role for one year or two years. That's great, but does it help you to really have a deeper understanding of that role? Okay. So I've took the time to understand the different roles, and that helps me. I move to any industry. I don't care. Take me to pharmaceutical industry. It does not matter. The basics are already there. The foundation is there.
On that particular point, one of the things, when you're just reading the story, it sort of feels like you get to these points where, I don't know, do you get bored or have you accomplished what you were there to do? Because that switch from IBM to Microsoft, there was some friction there.
Yes.
The movement from Microsoft into MTN, MTN into Altron, all of it, you know, there were naysayers who were like, but Nteto, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So from you, was it I got bored? Was it I had achieved what I wanted to?
Yeah. Most of the time, I like environments that are in a mess. So let me start there. I like those environments. And it gets to a point where now all you need to do is to maintain a particular environment.
Yeah.
It's not challenging for me. It's not exciting, those environments. So, for example, at Microsoft, the fifth and the sixth year were a big challenge for me because we were making our numbers, we're getting all of the awards, we're getting everything. Everything was just running so smoothly. There was no longer a challenge for me in that environment.
So it was too smooth.
Yeah, it was too smooth. It needed a certain type of a leader to take it forward, you know. So going into MTN, where they did not know how to build this new revenue source with the voice and data voice declining, the revenue declining, they needed to come up with this new way of doing things, build an ICT business. They did not know that. That required, you know, a lot of thinking and a lot of planning. Big challenge, a culture that was highly consumer culture. Now you are building an enterprise business.
Yeah.
You know, you are bringing something completely new in that environment. That was the attraction for me. Mm. Same as here, the attraction was that this company was making losses. You know, that was the attraction. How can we save this company? Mm. Yeah. Mm.
Something that I really, this is something I'm curious about when it comes to CEOs in general, but particularly executives that have a wide, I guess, geographical spread or responsibility.
Mm.
How do you keep up with it all? Like, what is the, I don't know, can I say a ritual? What is the daily ritual to actually keep up with it? Because like right now, Altron, you guys are in South Africa, Australia, the UK.
Yeah.
So you have to be, I guess, to some extent, I don't know, you might be keeping in touch with Brexit or what the economic numbers in Australia are. At the same time, you've got, you know, an ailing economy in South Africa, but at the same time, you have to understand what each of the operations is doing, right? Same with MTN. I think at the time, 30 million subscribers, etc. How do you...
Mm-hmm.
manage it all?
Look, my answer can be that, you know, we are these super heroes that have an understanding of everything.
Mm-hmm.
If that is the thing, those people are likely going to fail. What I do is that I try to make sure that I've got people in the different territories that have a deep understanding of those environments. If you're in the UK, have somebody who understands the UK market. If you are in Australia, have somebody running Australia. If you have employed a COO, have a COO that you can trust is capable. You know, so have each and every one of the roles, people that are able to do their piece. So all you do is to really connect with them from time to time and just, for example, I sit on the board of our UK business. So once a quarter, I go there, you know, the same thing with Australia, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm forever watching what's going on there. You know, we communicate with my colleagues in the UK. If they pick up certain things, they communicate because you know you've got a capable person there.
Yeah.
Some leaders, what they try to do is they become the center of everything. I'm actually the opposite. You know, I try to build a team of people that actually end up not even needing me. You know, I become, you know, if I can pull myself out of the situation and this whole thing runs, that is the, you know, I've done my job, you know. You know, when I look at what has happened at Microsoft, I'm excited to see what is going on there because you build a team, an inherited team, you build it and you live and things continue and they even do better. You know, that's how I would like to see things, you know, by identifying the best people and put those people around you.
In this, you know, building the teams, keeping up, you know, the different responsibilities, how have you managed to stay married in this entire, along this entire journey? Because through the story, your wife and your daughter, you know, they've gone literally, you know, people talk about going to the ends of the world.
Yes.
They literally went with you, you know, along the whole way.
Mm.
So how have you managed to balance that? And how, you know, because I think a lot of people in this day and age, especially young people, were made to believe that it's either your career or it's a marriage. It can't be
both. We have to make choices, and those choices have got consequences. So what I do, I'll just share a few things. The first thing is that I try to structure my life or my day in line with the kind of person that I am.
Okay.
What do I mean by that? I am a morning person.
All right.
You know? I don't know whether it's something that comes with my genes or is it because when my mother used to wake me up at 4:30, you know, I don't, whatever it is, I am a morning person now. So I do not, you won't find me having a dinner meeting with customers.
Okay.
You'll find me having breakfast meeting with customers.
Ah.
You'll find me having a lunch meeting with customers, but hey, Don't ask. At 6 o'clock, I'm going home.
You're done.
I'm done. You know, everybody knows here. You know, at 6 o'clock, I'm going home. I have to have dinner with my family because I left. When I left, they were asleep. I cannot when they come. I'm coming back. They're still asleep. You know, so I have dinner with my family. You know, we have engaged there. We have discussions about their day and my day. You know, we connect like that. So that's the discipline. Very, you may think that, hey, how do you train people? You know, you train people to you tell them, you draw the line. You know, this line, you don't cross this line. You know, don't come to me with your customer meeting. Why can't we do breakfast? Why can't we? In fact, most customers, when you give them that option, they want that because they also want to be with their families
later
in the evening, you know. So that's the first thing. The other thing is many of us do not take our 20 or 25 days of leave. You know, don't use any of that. I use all of my leave. So I always say here to the guys that report to me, you are not impressing me by not going on vacation. You know, because in fact, I look at you and judge you poorly. Like, oh, you're not going, you know, all of us need to have some time out. So there's that as well, being very strict. You have been given those 20, 25 days, use them, you know. And I use those 20 days with my family. We travel, of course. So that's that, you know, being very disciplined around your time. Also, I also, you remember, I said you need to be self-aware. I'm an introvert.
Okay.
So with that, I know that I have a huge capacity for listening.
Okay.
So I create opportunities within the company for me to listen to our staff. You know, so go there, we have a round table for 2 hours. They tell me, what are the things that we're not doing right? What are the things we're doing wrong? For me, those 2 hours, it's not a torture. It's something that I enjoy. You know, I enjoy. But for somebody else, if you do that, it may be tough because all you want to talk about yourself. I don't want to talk about myself. I want to hear them, you know. So that's that thing. You need to know yourself and connect and try and structure your day in line with who you are.
As we round up the discussion, I just want to touch on 2 last points. The first one is another theme that carries through the story, and it's politics.
Yeah.
You seem to have a very interesting relationship with politics. You don't want to be in it, but you're definitely watching it, paying attention to it. So I wanted to perhaps, you know, get a sense from you. And one of the things you do, you write, you've written for a number of publications, and it's usually just around what's going on in the country and the leadership. Where does this book, how does this particular book contribute, you know, to that particular messaging, you know, for you?
Yeah. This book, more especially towards the end, it contributes by trying to speak to our leaders that we seem to be drifting away from what shaped this country What is it that shaped this country? We've got a constitution of this country. And what does that constitution say? It says that South Africa belongs to all who live in it. Mm. Some people may take this thing lightly. This is a very, very important statement. When you say it belongs to all, you cannot now say that whites are settlers when you say it belongs to all. You cannot now say that there are certain groups that do not belong to this. No, we need to create an environment that is inclusive.
Yeah.
What I'm seeing happening now is that there's starting to be a shift away where we're talking about, yes, we need to address the question of land, and you start to hear people talking about our people. When people saying that our people, who are they talking about? These are leaders saying our people. Is our people the whole of South Africa, or is it a specific group? You know, and this is coming often with these new leaders, and I'm hearing this thing, and it concerns me. Concerns me, and it's going to destroy this country. The thing that is, when I look at the thing that has made many of the organizations that I've worked for, the thing that have made me to be successful, is actually pulling everybody together.
Yeah.
Not a message that is saying, I come here as a black CEO and say, I want to make this place black. Uh-huh. No, I come in as I happen to be a black CEO, right, but I'm creating an environment where everybody can contribute to our success,
uh-huh,
and where everybody can see themselves in the future of this company. You know, that is something that resonates with many South Africans. That's something that people invest in and build. When you stand up as a leader and you start talking to segments of society, you are divisive, yeah, you know. You may not know that you are divisive. I'm feeling that we're at that stage now where people are, there's a lot of this thing. My contribution is, let's go back to what works, what we know works. Let's go back to the ideals around this country as they formed by our constitution. So that is my contribution here.
Lastly, This book, Betting on a Donkey, sort of gives us some insight into, you know, what's happened from, I guess, birth until now,
mm-hmm,
until about 2019. What are you looking forward to in the future? Or, you know, usually people say what's next, but I'm more concerned with what are you looking forward to going forward?
Yeah, so I've got a mission here. I've signed up with Altron. I took this role because it was attractive to me for a number of reasons. One, it was a company that was formed by an Afrikaner, and it was battling, and it was going through tough times. And the people that have made it to battle were not black people, you know. So, and they reached out to somebody who happened to be a black person to come and fix that company. That to me is something that is important, because most of the time you hear that, you know, we as black people, we are the source of creating problems.
Yeah.
Here you have a company that we have not been the source of problems. Actually, we are being asked to come and fix the problems that were not created by people like me. So here you have a situation where you no longer have people who, so the people that have contributed to the problem happen to be black. So blacks have got a monopoly for messing things up. You know, that narrative is gone through what we're doing here. You know, so that's the first thing. So what do I want? I want to get to the end of that. And I'm not yet done. You know, I want to create, together with my team, of course, here, I want to create a world-class ICT company.
Yeah.
You know, based in South Africa, being led by a black person. You know, that is what I want to create, you know. And that company is going to be there over the next 3 to 4 years. That's what I want to concentrate on. Beyond that, I see myself and contributing in some ways in helping the public sector, you know, and giving back. You know, it could be in the SOEs that need some leadership or what. I see myself contributing somewhat in that space, yeah, in the future.
Okay. Yeah. So you heard it. That was us in conversation with Mteto Nyati. His new book, Betting on a Dog, he just detailing his story, his career, family life, his thoughts around politics, around leadership, around operating in the fourth industrial revolution and using technology to take economies forward. Very interesting discussion. I will borrow from something that I just forget who wrote it, but there's an excerpt in the book where one of the contributors says that some people might not read this book cover to cover. They might, you know, want to go and read, you know, particular sections on their own. Do with it what you will. It is an interesting read. So thank you so much, Mteto. How can people find you on social media? Because I understand that people are following you a lot on Twitter.
I'm more active on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So you can find me there on LinkedIn. Of course, I've got a Twitter handle, which is Mteto N, M-T-E-T-O-N.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So those are the two platforms that I'm more active on LinkedIn. Yeah.
Okay. So that's been it for today. Thank you so much. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Life under the Podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. Share, like, subscribe. You can tell others about this particular discussion on Twitter. Our hashtag is #BDSpotlight. Review and subscribe to our podcast for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. So Business Day Spotlight, remember, is a multimedia live production. So for myself, Mudio Gawaza, and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.